Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, January 10th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. The first thing is we finally got some snow, and we got our most major snowfall in a couple of years. So I think we've got, 6 inches out there?
Maybe
6 inches, somewhere between 4 and 6 inches.
Pushing it, yeah.
We weren't in the heaviest of the snow, but we weren't in the lightest either. We are sitting at about 300 feet here in Mansfield Center. We're not in Mansfield Center, like where 195 goes through. They sit at about 200 feet. So my office sits at about 200 and change, and this house sits at like 330. So we don't have the most of the snow. My dear friend Cass Forsyth, who lives up in Stafford, she showed a photo from her back porch, and it looks like she got close to a foot. So that's kind of exciting. So it really depends where you are, how much snow that you got. I haven't been outside in it. I chose yesterday to engage in the practice of hygge, which is that Danish practice of leaning into the winter, staying inside, drinking hot beverages. And I, in fact, drank a cup of tea yesterday. I had a wonderful muffin from my friend Jackie, who bakes this time of year. She has Willow Valley Farm, and in the wintertime she bakes. And so she makes these heritage corn muffins, and they're amazing. So I had one of those yesterday, and that was really good. Muffin and tea, that's the way to go. So the snow is beautiful. It's very bright. There's a lot of brightness to the sky right now. It's sunny today. I think we're going to get sun today, and then it's going to cloud up and be rainy tomorrow. And Wednesday, we're going to have mid-50s, and the snow's going to be gone. So if you're listening to this on Wednesday, snow's gone, unfortunately. So hopefully we'll get more snowfalls, but this was delightful. Some people don't like snow and could do without it. I don't feel that way. I think it's supposed to snow in the winter. That's what it's supposed to do. The other fun thing is that Ron got me a bird feeder for my birthday, and the bird feeder is out back, and the Junkos have found it. So there was a good dozen Junkos either on the bird feeder, under the bird feeder. Ron had thrown some seed down on the ground too. The Junkos dig into the snow and get to the seeds that way. It's so cute.
They know where they are.
They're fat little birds, and they have black backs and white bellies, and they're chubby, and they're just so cute. So we're very excited that the Junkos are here to visit us. All right, so there's that. And then in terms of my update on my health's been a little bit up and down. I had a really good day yesterday. I feel mildly neuro today, as I call it. Not too bad. I'm continuing to do a lot of detoxification, and next week I'm going to talk about more specifically all of the things to do around detoxification. Detoxification is a little bit controversial because if you look at conventional health news sources, they often talk about how it's not necessary to do anything specific to detoxify, that your body already detoxifies. And there is some truth to that. Your liver's job is to detoxify. While I'm sitting here, my liver is running detoxification enzymes. Ron's is as well, and so is yours. However, if you want your liver to be efficient, there are some things you can do to make it more efficient. And that's what I'm going to talk about. And if you, on the one hand, your body's always detoxing, that is absolutely true, but it's not going to detoxify as efficiently or as quickly if there are certain things in the way. So in naturopathic medicine, we always talk about the removing obstacles to cure. And obstacles to cure, for example, can be eating a poor diet, not getting enough rest, not drinking enough water, consuming things that tax your liver. So if your liver is distracted by having to get rid of things like alcohol and sugar and processed food, those cells all of the cells in your liver do everything. They all do all the same things. Every single cell is the same as every other cell. But if you distract them by throwing, you know, sugar at them, by throwing alcohol at them, by throwing chemicals at them, then they're going to prioritize that and they're not going to be as available to get rid of toxins that have been sitting in your body for a while. Or in my case, where I'm trying to get rid of a tick-borne illness, what I want them to do is to get rid of neurotoxins that give me the shakes. So I want my liver to be more available to do that. And there are some ways that you can enhance that. So we're going to talk about that more next week. I will show you that one of the things that I did, and I'll talk about this more next week, is all the water now has lemon in it. Okay, so it either has lemon or lime, and I think I'm going to go get grapefruit too. L'chaim, right? So I find that if I'm feeling neurologically weird, if I take a sip of lemon water, it helps me. It makes me feel better. There's something brightening about it and enlivening about it, similarly to when I take a sniff of peppermint. I find that peppermint and spearmint oil, if I smell those, it wakes me up. And if I'm feeling neurologically logy, it helps. So drinking lemon water, drinking lime water. I don't know if I'll do orange. I think orange has too many sweet elements and not enough of the citrusy and bitter elements. But I'm going to get a grapefruit and try doing grapefruit water too. And you're probably thinking, oh, grapefruit, you're not supposed to take grapefruit when you're taking all these different meds. So I can quickly explain that. So There are pharmaceuticals. You have several phases of your liver detox, and there are certain enzymes that carry pharmaceuticals out of your system. And most of them are CYP, cytochrome P450 enzymes. And they're labeled based on their chemical structure. So there are certain liver enzymes that are considered to be phase one. So when you take a pharmaceutical into your body, you have what's called the first liver pass. So those pharmaceuticals are going to go into your liver, and they're going to be broken down by specific enzymes that are part of that phase one enzyme system. And they're broken down into metabolites, and they're not necessarily the metabolites that your body's going to use for the pharmaceutical effect. Then they go through your system again. They leave your liver, and they get recycled, and they come back to the liver, and then they're broken down again by the phase two liver enzymes. So grapefruit has a compound in it called naringin. And naringin is a flavonoid. It's actually good for you in a number of ways. But naringin will slow down phase one liver detox. So the concern is, if your pharmaceutical is detoxified by phase one, and probably if you have a pharmaceutical that's detoxified by phase one, you've been told avoid grapefruit while taking this med. So if it's detoxified by phase one, that naringin is going to slow down the detoxification, which can effectively raise the dose of the drug that you're taking, because you're going to detoxify it more slowly, because naringin is slowing down its detoxification. So the thing is, they tell you don't eat grapefruit at all, because they're concerned that some people are going to have a half a grapefruit every 2 weeks, and other people, it's their routine to have half a grapefruit every day, and some people have grapefruit juice every day, and the naringin is going to be more concentrated in grapefruit juice. Now, if you go to the bar and you have a sea breeze, and you, because sea breeze has grapefruit juice in it, right?
I don't know.
No. Sea breeze has grapefruit.
I have no idea what a sea breeze is.
Yeah, sea breeze is grapefruit juice, cranberry, and I think vodka. It's a very refreshing, light-tasting, summery drink. Anyway, so if you go to the bar and have a sea breeze, and then you don't have grapefruit again for 2 weeks, you're probably fine. It's not going to short out the functioning of your pharmaceutical. If you have a half a grapefruit at brunch on Sunday, and then you don't have it again until you go out for brunch 3 weeks later, don't worry about it. I don't think you need to worry about it. Or if you have a little bit of grapefruit juice, or say you have a seltzer that has grapefruit in it, or grapefruit flavoring even. If you have it, if you don't have it every day, it's probably not a problem. If you're having 8 to 16 ounces of grapefruit juice every single day, or it's your habit to have a half a grapefruit every morning, and you're on a phase one detoxed drug, you probably don't want to do that. So, but I don't think you need to be afraid of grapefruit. I don't have that issue, so I'm going to buy a grapefruit. I'm going to eat some of it. And I'm going to squeeze a lot of it into my water. And that's going to be fun and different because I love grapefruit. It's very refreshing and very enjoyable. One of the houses my mother used to live in had a grapefruit tree, so I used to get fresh grapefruit from the tree, and that was delightful. All right, so I'm going to talk more. I want to organize my thoughts around detox to give you a better picture of what detox looks like. People are very interested in doing that in the month of January, so let's talk about that more next week. Okay, and so what I want to talk about this week, I'll start with my take on New Year's resolutions. So, Ron, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Good question.
Right. So no.
No, not really. Nothing that I've ever, that I've really put any major thought into.
Right.
I think one of them is going to be to try to ride my bicycle more for transportation.
Oh, well, that's a nice New Year's resolution.
Yeah. My record last year was a full 4 days in a row.
Very good.
But at least once a week is what I'm looking for.
Wow. That's a nice resolution.
So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
You're not going to do that.
No, that's not going to be one of my resolutions. I don't really like to make New Year's resolutions because I'm doing a lot of things that are helpful and healing for me. The New Year's resolution that everybody likes to make, which is lose weight, I don't even believe in taking that on as a cause. I feel like the best way to talk about weight loss is to not talk about weight loss. That you need to do the things today that help you with fat loss, and then you may lose some fat in relation to that. But worrying about a number on a scale makes people crazy, and that's why there's this big craze around these GLP-1 enhancer drugs. And that's something we're going to get to after a bit as well. I'm not sure if we'll get to it today, but we are going to talk about that at some point. So I'm not so big on resolutions. What I do like to do this time of year, I find that I will have a stress response to all of the different things that have happened, you know, leading up to, you know, you go from summer and then you go into autumn and then you try to stay just as active in the autumn as you were in the summer. And it's getting darker and darker and colder, and you're still pushing yourself. And then I find that around Thanksgiving, I really need Thanksgiving break. And now that I'm having these health issues, the health issues get worse again. And this happened twice. It happened around Thanksgiving, and it happened again around Christmas. So I find that January, if I want to make a resolution to get fit and more exercise, my resolution has to be work on your health, and I can't necessarily count on, you know, getting lots more exercise. I have to work on stress reduction, and that's my big thing. So, you know, I'm going to work on, for 2024, I'm going to work on really cleaning up my health, and because that I have to, because otherwise I'm not going to feel well. So I kind of have no choice. So I plan to do that. And I also plan to reduce stress, to figure out ways to do that, to work in a way that's less stressful, where I can offer more to the world in a more comprehensive way, with less in a lower stress way, so that I like the idea of offering more. Like right now, I'm doing these radio shows, that, and the radio shows are a weekly 1 hour show. What I'd like to do is put out more short bites, short sound bites, so more Instagram, more reels, and things like that. So look for that in the coming weeks, in the coming months, that you might see more reels from me and little things, little sound bites that you can, if you have just a little bit of time on your lunch break, you can look at and you'll be done, and then you feel like, oh, I learned something today. So I want to reach out to people more that way. All right. So one of the things I've been going through is I had a big birthday in November, and, you know, woo-hoo, I'm in my seventh decade now. Woo. Wow.
Hello.
And so I have some topics that I wanted to talk about related to being in later decades. Mm. And so
I like to call it more experienced.
Yes, of course. Well, every day that you're alive, you have more experience.
You have more experience.
Yeah.
We should hope, anyway.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, I'm 20 years old with 40 years of experience.
There you go.
Yeah.
And getting better than that.
Exciting. And here's my lemon water, so just so you know, this is water with lemon in it. L'chaim. Yeah. That means to life in Hebrew. Anyway, so let's talk about sarcopenia. All right. So sarcopenia is muscle loss. And I have written here that it's due to aging. But sarcopenia can happen for other reasons, too. The word specifically refers to the loss of muscle. The enia means low, and sarco refers to muscle. And sarco is a word that relates to connective tissue. But in this case, it's being used to mean a loss of muscle. So it can occur because of aging. It can occur because of other health conditions. And if you adjust your diet and activity level, you can prevent or reverse sarcopenia, or it is possible to do that anyway. All right. So muscle loss affects about 10% of adults over 50 years old. I can't believe it's that low. I think people lose muscle. I don't know where they got that statistic, because it seems like it's lower than that. It can decrease life expectancy and quality of life. Some of the causes are natural consequences of aging. Others are preventable. And if you eat a healthy diet and get regular exercise, it can reverse sarcopenia. When you have more muscle mass, you can have a longer lifespan, and you definitely have a better quality of life. Sarcopenia... I understood it as a reduction of connective tissue. It says that the translation is actually lack of flesh. It's a condition of age-associated muscle degeneration, becomes more common in people who are over the age of 50. After middle age, adults can lose as much as 3% of their muscle strength every year, and it limits their ability to perform daily activities. Unfortunately, it can also shorten your life expectancy, compared to those with normal muscle strength. It's caused by an imbalance between signals for muscle growth and signals for tear down. If you get cell growth processes that are anabolic, that cause muscle growth, and the cell growth processes that cause muscle tear down are called catabolism, the catabolic events. So growth hormones act with that have protein destroying enzymes to keep muscle steady through a cycle of growth, stress, or injury, destruction, and healing. The cycle is always occurring, and when things are in balance, muscle keeps its strength over time. But during aging, the body becomes more resistant to the normal growth signals, which tips the balance towards breaking stuff down, catabolism, and loss. So the things that accelerate muscle loss, when you don't, it's a use it or lose it phenomenon. Mm. If you don't use your muscles, they're going to break down. So if you sit around or you don't do any kind of regular movement that feeds your muscles, you're going to lose muscle mass. Certainly, if you are on bed rest or you're immobile because of an injury or an illness, you'll have a more rapid loss of muscle. There's studies that show that just 2 or 3 weeks of decreased walking and other activities is enough to decrease muscle mass and strength. And periods of decreased activity can become a vicious cycle. You lose your muscle strength, which results in greater fatigue, and it makes it more difficult to return to normal activity. If you don't eat a diet that works for you, an unbalanced diet can make it so that you lose more muscle mass. So if you have insufficient calories and protein, you'll have weight loss and more and reduced muscle mass. And low-calorie and low-protein diets become more common with aging. People have changes in taste. They have problems with their teeth and gums and with swallowing and also with shopping and cooking. All the things that make it so that you can have a healthy diet, people start to have problems with, so they don't tend to eat as well. There's a recommendation to do 25 to 30 grams of protein at each meal to prevent sarcopenia. And I'm always telling people at least 70 grams of protein a day. I should probably move that up to 75. Mm-hmm. And so this is your average person. Your average person should be, it's fine for your average person to eat 90 grams of protein in a day. It's going to depend on your size and your activity, but an athlete, yeah. you're looking at least around 90 to 100 grams of protein a day. So eating some protein at each meal is a very good idea. And I have people who, they don't like protein, or they, you know, they don't like animal protein, so they don't tend to eat as much protein, and they don't necessarily get as much plant protein as they should. Oh, I eat fish 3 times a week, and then they're not necessarily supplementing with a shake or with, you know, nuts and seeds. Or all the or the plant sources of protein, and the, and so they get sarcopenia. So illness and inflammation send signals to the body to break down and rebuild damaged cells. Chronic and long-term illnesses can result in inflammation, and that can disrupt the normal balance of tearing down and healing, and that can and cause muscle loss. So there was a study of patients with long-term inflammation from COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And that showed they had reduced muscle mass. Of course, if you have COPD and you're not breathing well, you may not be as likely to move or get exercise. Other long-term inflammation can be caused by autoimmune diseases. So lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis are particularly bad because not only do you have increased inflammation, the inflammatory situation in the digestive system makes it so that you don't absorb protein and amino acids as well. Severe burns can cause sarcopenia because you've lost, if you're burned down to the muscle, you've lost muscle mass, and then you have scar tissue, and the places where you've had the burns have a harder time building up muscle mass. A chronic infection like tuberculosis is going to cause decreased muscle mass, and so is having inflamed blood vessels, vasculitis. And that if you have elevated C-reactive protein, so you can get your doctor to check C-reactive protein for you. If your C-reactive protein is elevated, C-reactive protein is an indicator of generalized inflammation. It's a sort of nonspecific indicator of inflammation. It'll be elevated. It could be elevated when you're sick. It could be elevated when you have an injury. It can be elevated when you have an autoimmune condition. And so it can be a predictor for sarcopenia. And that's actually been studied. Stress will also cause sarcopenia, and that makes sense. So people with chronic liver disease, sarcopenia is more common with health conditions that cause stress. And so chronic liver disease causes stress on the body, and people with chronic liver disease are going to experience sarcopenia. So they have more stress, so that means that there's more cortisol around. Cortisol is a catabolic hormone, and it tends to break down tissue. And so when you have increased cortisol from stress of any kind, whether it's emotional stress, if you're just very, very busy, or if you have a job where you're sitting a lot and you're stressed, and of course you're not moving if you're sitting a lot and you're stressed, that cortisol will break down muscle tissue. And so just every day-to-day stress, if you don't back that up with exercise to rebuild your muscles, you may lose muscle mass. Chronic kidney disease, stress on the body. So with chronic liver disease and chronic kidney disease, the thing is that with chronic kidney disease, you're going to be losing more amino acids through your urine if you have chronic kidney disease. Your absorption is not going to be happening as well. And with chronic liver disease, the liver is very involved with protein synthesis, and you're not going to have as good protein synthesis if you have chronic liver disease. Of course, cancer treatments place a lot of stress on the body, and cancer is a very metabolically active situation where cancer cells take up the resources of your body so that they can grow, and your body is desperately trying to fight it so you can have increased cortisol, but the cancer tries to redirect resources of your body to feed the cancer itself, so you don't have healthy growth of your own tissues. So that can relate to that can give you decreased muscle mass. So when you have decreased muscle mass, you might have decreased muscle strength. These early signs of it include feeling weaker over time, having some difficulty, more difficulty than usual, lifting familiar objects. A hand grip strength test can be used to diagnose sarcopenia and may be used sometimes. Some decreased strength might show in other ways, like you might walk more slowly. You might have more easy fatiguing during exercise and just finding yourself being less active. If you lose weight without trying, so you're eating the same amount of food, if you eat the same amount of food and you start to lose weight, you might have sarcopenia because you're losing muscle mass. And these signs can also occur in other medical conditions. So you should talk to somebody to make sure there's nothing bad going on. So did you know that exercise can increase your muscle mass? It can reverse sarcopenia. So you want to combine cardio exercise, resistance training, and balance training. It can prevent and even reverse muscle loss. And even just 2 to 4 exercises a week can be enough to help. So resistance training, of course, is going to help you increase your muscle mass. And resistance training can be started at any time. It doesn't matter how weak you are. You just start at whatever level you're at, and then you work from there. And don't feel like, you know, because, you know, somebody else can lift much heavier weights than you, that you should be able to do that. No, you don't think like that. You think about where you are at a given time, and you do exercise that works for you. But you do have to progressively increase the amount of strength or amount of resistance that you're using, or you won't have muscle gains. So resistance training, and I usually say resistance training because I don't want to make people feel like they must do weight training. You don't have to do weight training. You can use weights. Absolutely. Weights can be really helpful if you have them or if you have access to a gym. But you can also use resistance band, and you can also do body weight exercises. That's all resistance training. It's anytime you're pushing the body against some kind of resistance, whether it's weights, whether it's the floor, whether it's standing up and balancing. Those are all examples of resistance training. That's why I tend to use that term, because it encompasses everything that we're looking at. Because even yoga, when you're doing standing poses and flows in yoga, that's resistance training too. So is Pilates. So if you take exercise classes where you're doing body weight exercises, that's resistance training. So when you do resistance exercise, the tension on your muscle fibers results in growth signals that lead to increased strength. Resistance exercise increases actions of growth-promoting hormones. So when you do resistance training, you're going to kick out some growth hormone. You're going to kick out some testosterone. And it doesn't matter what your age is. You're still going, the muscles themselves are going to kick those out and turn around and cause the muscle cells to grow. And if you do resistance training, that will counterbalance any stress that you have in your life, especially if you do the resistance training 2 to 3 times a week. So you also get when muscles pull on bones, you also increase the density of your bones. And so you're going to get minerals and protein going into your bones to make them stronger as well. But the signals that you create when you're actually using your muscles, the signals tell you to make new proteins. They turn on muscle stem cells called satellite cells that reinforce the existing muscle. And resistance exercise is the most direct way to increase muscle mass and prevent its loss. So one of the things we see is that we're in the cycling community, and we also are connected to the running community, although Ron and I mostly don't run. We run for the Manchester Road Race, and that's pretty much it. And then we don't run until we're training for the Manchester Road Race. We run the road race, and then we're done. We know a lot of people who do a lot of cardio, and they don't do a lot of resistance training, and they wonder why they get a big gut, and over time their performance goes down because they're spending a lot of time on the bike or spending a lot of time running, and they find that over time they lose muscle mass, they feel more tired, and they get slower, and that's what happens. And so when you get to be a certain age, it's harder. You don't make the reproductive hormones that you used to have, and you're not as resistant to stress as you used to be. So when you make estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone when you're younger, those are catabolic hormones. They cause growth of tissue. And when you don't have as much of that stuff, that you also have cortisol, and you always have cortisol. Your adrenals are always making cortisol because you need cortisol to run your daily life. But if you're cortisol dominant, then you're going to have more breakdown of tissue, and you don't have those reproductive hormones, increasing your muscle mass and counterbalancing the effects of cortisol. You have it. So if you're a little cortisol dominant, you're going to have more muscle breakdown. If you balance that with getting regular resistance training, those muscles are going to make hormones to help you rebuild muscle, which is great. So there was a study where they studied adults who were 65 to 94 years old who showed that performing resistance exercises 3 times a week increased muscle strength over 12 weeks. So these are people who are 65 and up. And some of the people were in their 80s and 90s, and it still increased their muscle mass. So you can do resistance training at any stage of life. If you can move, you can do resistance training, and it will help you. They did leg presses and extending the knees against resistance on weight machines. So you can do fitness training if you do sustained exercise that raises your heart rate, including aerobic exercise and endurance training that can also control sarcopenia. So getting on your bike, you will still gain some muscle mass. If you overdo it, you're probably going to reduce your muscle mass. But if you're doing reasonable amounts, like if you're doing a century every week, you really have to work on maintaining your muscle mass. But if that's not what you're doing, you'll see that if you watch the riders during the Tour de France or any of the Grand Tours, they start out skinny and they get skinnier over the course of the tour, unless they're the sprinters. but they do, their arms are like spaghetti. It's really incredible. So they're chewing away their muscle mass because they're on the bike for so long. Their cortisol is so high. They're just consuming. Their body is consuming itself, and they often can't even get enough calories in to make up for the muscle mass that they're using. And they sometimes have to take nutrients by IV. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is pretty crazy. So anyway, if you're looking to have a healthy life balance, training to be a Grand Tour rider is probably not the way to go. That when you get to be older, it's better to do fewer really long rides and do like maybe do a long ride or two a week. And then if you're going to continue to ride, do short rides that have sprints in them and have hills in them. And, you know, it's okay to do a ride that's no more than an hour and do a warm up, do some intervals, and then cool down and go home. That's okay to do. So, and then you'll build more muscle mass and you'll be more healthy and you'll be less likely to break down your muscles. And there was a study that found that 5 days a week of cycling, jogging, or hiking did increase muscle mass. Women started with 15 minutes of the activities, increasing to 45 minutes over 12 months. So in this study where they increased cycling, jogging, and hiking, they didn't do any more than 45 minutes of it. So, and you know, in our bike club, we're doing rides that are no less than an hour and a half, 2 hours. I mean, because our shortest rides are in the 20s. And, you know, we're not super fast anymore. So walking can prevent and even reverse sarcopenia. And it's activity that most people can do for free anywhere they live, as long as they're not injured. I do have patients who have enough injury that it's difficult for them to just go for a walk. So there was a Japanese study of folks over 65 years old. They found that 6 months of walking increased muscle mass, especially in those whose muscle mass was already low. The distance that each participant walked was different, but they were encouraged to increase the distance by 10% each month. And another study found that there was on people over 60 years of age found that faster walkers were less likely to have sarcopenia. So you want to push it a little bit. And that's why I tell people you don't have to like do the whole walk as a speed walk, but you can warm up and then walk, then do a bunch of intervals where you walk as fast as you can till you're out of breath, and then walk slowly until you catch your breath, and then do it again a few times until you can't anymore, and then cool down and go home. And that doesn't have to take very long. That workout can be less than an hour. All right. So there are nutrients that can fight sarcopenia. The first one, obviously, is protein. So getting protein into your diet signals your muscle. So eating protein will help you with sarcopenia. The more protein is not something that that your body is excited about using for energy. If your body's desperate, it will take protein and break it down into sugar and use it for energy in your body. But your body doesn't like to do that. It's not efficient. It's easier for your body to use fat because it has endless stores of fat. Well, most people do. And it also, and your body will also use carbohydrates that you eat for energy. It's much more, it's much less efficient to break down protein to turn it into, to fat and into energy. So your body is much more interested when it sees amino acids. It's going to take those amino acids and turn it into peptides, polypeptides, and proteins to shore up the strength in your body. So it's going to help you with proteins for to build your muscles and to build your organs and to create enzymes. That your body's much more interested in doing that. And the more protein you eat, the easier it is for your body to build muscle mass. So as people age, their muscles become less resistant to signals to build muscle in the body. So you need to eat more protein to signal the muscle growth. So there was a study of men over 70 when they ate meals that had at least 35 grams of protein in it. They had increased muscle growth. So pushing protein consumption in older people helps them to maintain muscle mass. Then there was a study finding that younger men only needed 20 grams of protein per meal to stimulate the growth. So because your body is more efficient at processing the protein when you're younger, you actually don't need as much. Your protein needs actually increase as you age. And then there was another study where men over the age of 65 took some 15 gram supplements of essential amino acids, and that helped with muscle growth too. So taking amino acids, taking a supplement of amino acids or taking a protein supplement is going to help you build muscle mass. Leucine, which is one of your essential amino acids, is particularly important for regulating muscle growth. It's one of the branched chain amino acids. The three branched chain amino acids are leucine, isoleucine, and valine. So we will sometimes give supplements of branched chain amino acids that help with muscle growth. And if you take them after a bout of exercise, your body is primed for absorbing them. So that's a good time to have them. If you are not dairy intolerant, whey protein. If people are not dairy intolerant or not intolerant to whey, I do recommend them to eat, to consume whey protein, because whey protein has a lot of branched chain amino acids in it. It has immune globulins, and it's very, very absorbable, unless it causes inflammation in your body, in which case it's not a good idea. So I don't do whey protein because I find that it bothers my stomach. Ron does do whey protein. It doesn't bother his stomach. And so that helps him to rebuild his muscle mass, and he's more resistant to building muscle mass because he's in his, well into his seventh decade, approaching his eighth.
Easy.
So it's good for him to do the whey protein, and he generally has a whey protein shake, after a workout. Meat, fish, and eggs, all good sources of leucine, and soy protein isolate also, if you can tolerate soy protein isolate, it is also a good source of leucine. So all of these protein sources can help with muscle mass. All right. And then there's vitamin D. If you don't have enough vitamin D, that can be related to sarcopenia. So the vitamin D does so many things. Here's another one. Of course, vitamin D is helpful for bone growth. Well, guess what? It's helpful for muscle growth too. And that may be because you have at the end of the nerves, the neuromuscular junctions where the nerves interact with the muscles, they're calcium mediated. So if you have adequate vitamin D is going to help your calcium metabolism, and it's going to help to set up the calcium at those neuromuscular junctions properly. And so you're going to have more effective muscle use if you have adequate vitamin D. So the best dose of, and it says here, the best dose of vitamin D for preventing sarcopenia is unclear. Well, of course. Now, why would that be? That would be because people vary in their ability to produce and make vitamin D. And they also vary genetically in their vitamin D receptors. If they have anomalies in their vitamin D receptors, they may not absorb it as well. So the level of vitamin D that they would need to get their vitamin D levels up would be higher. A lot of people don't spend enough time in the sun. And, you know, here in New England, we aren't spending a lot of time in the sun. And what time we are spending in the sun, we're all covered up. Mm-hmm. So you need to have direct sun exposure to your skin to make vitamin D. And, of course, if you have too much sun exposure,
it's not good for you.
Right. Yeah. You can get sunburn, and that's bad for your skin. So people tend to use sunblock. And when you use sunblock, you make less vitamin D. That's just how it goes. So, So what you want to do is get your practitioner, somebody who can order labs for you, to order a vitamin D level, and you want to make sure that your vitamin D level is somewhere between 35 and 45 nanograms per milliliter. It's not necessary to have it much higher than 45 nanograms. I mean, if you're sitting at 50, that's probably not a big deal. But in order to get it over 45, you have to take supplements because your body regulates the amount of vitamin D it makes. If you get out in the sun a lot, your body will turn off vitamin D production once it has an adequate amount. So in order to get up to your, you know, 50, 60, 70s nanograms per milliliter of vitamin D, you have to take a lot of it. And I don't recommend that anymore. I recommend that people stay between 35 and 45 nanograms per milliliter, but I commonly see people at the lower end of that range or even out of range. I have people coming in with vitamin D levels of 12. So they're probably not eating a good proportion of foods that have some vitamin D in it. And they may also have a gene where they don't produce vitamin D or they don't absorb vitamin D as well. So the dose of vitamin D that works for each person differs. And I have to tweak it based on the person. So if a person comes in and they're sitting at 12 nanograms per milliliter, I'm probably going to give them 5,000 IU for a couple of months. And then I'm going to recheck and see where they're at. And then I might dial it back. If somebody comes in and they're at 30, I will probably give them 1,000 to 2,000 IU to take a day and then check again to see where they're at. And again, if they get to be too high, I'll dial it back. I myself, the last time I checked my vitamin D, I was at 40, which is fine. 40 nanograms per milliliter is just fine. And I have to take 3,000 IU a day with some vitamin K2 in it to get there. So I take drops that have, there's 1,000 IU per drop, and I drop it on a spoon and I lick it off, and I'm taking 3,000 IU a day. 3,000 IU may be too much for you, and it's certainly too much for some of my patients. It really depends on what else they're eating, whether they're getting out in the sun, and whether they have an anomaly, a genetic anomaly, by which they have a harder time absorbing vitamin D. Then there's omega-3 fatty acids. Consuming omega-3 fatty acids by way of seafood or supplements will increase muscle growth. So if you have omega-3s, and I frequently recommend my patients to take fish oil because there's so many people don't get in enough essential fatty acids. I would hazard to say most people don't like to eat fish. I have a hard time convincing my patients to eat fish. Some people just, it smells bad. They don't like it. They just don't eat it regularly. So I'll beg them to take fish oil. Some of them will, some of them won't. But I take it myself. I'm using it for inflammation, and I'm also, obviously it's going to help me with muscle growth, which is great. And they studied some women over 45 and found that if they took 2 grams of fish oil with resistance training, it increased their muscle strength more than just resistance training without fish oil. So if you're doing resistance training and you have omega-3 fatty acids, especially from fish oil, you'll get more results. And why might that be? Well, you're moderating inflammation. That's one of the reasons. And if you moderate inflammation, one of the things that happens there is you have less cortisol. And when your cortisol is lower, you have more anabolism. Remember, we talked about anabolic tissue, anabolic growth. Anabolism is the growth of tissue. So you're going to have more anabolism the less inflammation you have. And essential fatty acids calm inflammation. The other piece is that every single cell in your body has essential fatty acids on it. The cell membranes, you have a fluid cell membrane in every single cell of your body. And if it has proper essential fatty acids, you're going to get more communication in and out of the cell. More nutrients are going to be able to get in and more waste products are going to be able to get out. And you're just going to be better nourished. The other thing is you need essential fatty acids to build cells. And when you're doing resistance training, what are you doing? You're building cells. And so if you have more essential fatty acids, you have more building blocks to build cells. So everybody wins. So if you can take fish oil, it's a good thing. I have some people who just absolutely can't take it. They don't like the way it tastes. If they take pills, it repeats on them. I'm very fortunate that I'm able to take fish oil, and I take liquid fish oil. I find that when I take, I tend to recommend liquid fish oil because it's a one and done thing. You're not dealing with swallowing a pill. You don't have to take water with it. I put a little bit in a tablespoon. I take about a tablespoon and a half a day, or not a tablespoon, a teaspoon and a half a day, half a tablespoon. And that gives me a decent amount of essential fatty acids. And it's easy to do. The fish oil that I have just tastes oily and lemony. I don't mind it. I'm not bothered by even the slightest amount of fishy taste. And if it's really fresh fish oil that you're keeping in the fridge, it's not going to taste fishy. It's going to not have those. What that fishy taste comes from ammonia, from the breakdown products of the proteins in the fish and giving that ammonia smell. And if your fish oil smells like that, it's bad. You need to get fresh fish oil. And you really need to keep fish oil in the fridge. Because it does have polyunsaturated fats in it that are prone to breaking down. So you keep it in the fridge, take a spoonful a day, and off you go. It's very easy. So I'm doing that as well. And then there's creatine. I have patients who take creatine. It's a small protein. You usually make it in the liver. Your body does make enough to help you. It's not an essential nutrient because your body does produce it, and your body makes enough to prevent you from being deficient. If you have creatine in your diet from meat or a supplement, it has been studied to increase muscle growth. And there was a study of a few studies where people took 5 grams a day, and people over 64 took it. And when they took it, they got more benefits from resistance training when they. So my understanding is that you really had to load up on the creatine, that you have to, like, before your workout, you have to take like 20 grams. But this is suggesting that 5 grams a day is enough. I don't always recommend it. It's kind of a pricey supplement, and I'd rather see people just eating protein, maybe taking a protein shake, taking essential fatty acids, than doing creatine. If they come in and they're already doing it, I'm okay with that. I'm fine because this is a study that shows that even just 5 grams a day is helpful. So when you lose muscle mass and strength, it's more common that it happens, and it can decrease your lifespan and your quality of life. You need to eat enough calories, enough food, and enough high quality protein that will slow the rate of muscle loss. Omega-3 fatty acids from fish, from eating fish, or even to some extent nuts and seeds and avocados and things like that are going to be helpful. But taking fish oil is going to be helpful, and taking at least 5 grams of creatine a day can also be helpful. But the most effective way to increase your muscle mass is what?
The most effective way to increase your muscle mass?
Yeah. It's move it or lose it.
Move it or lose it. Yeah.
Yes.
And lift some weights.
Yes. Move it or lose it. Well, it could be weightlifting. It could be resistance training. It could be balance training.
Right.
It could be, and things like yoga and Pilates and Qigong are also going to help because those are body weight exercises,
right.
Essentially.
Stop sitting still.
Yeah. don't only, also sitting still is good for you too. It's just that sitting
after
still.
After you do things.
Yes. So right. Rest is also good for you because rest will increase your muscle mass too. If you don't sleep well, that's an inducer of stress, and you won't gain your muscle mass as well either.
Oh, boy.
Right. So resistance is particularly effective using bands, weights, calisthenics, yoga, tai chi, qigong, and Pilates. and dance. All of those things are going to increase your muscle mass. And remember that balance exercises are important too. Your balance, when you lose muscle mass, you're going to lose proprioceptors in the muscles. So it's going to be harder to maintain balance. And so it's very important to do balance exercises too. Whether you're doing with weight training, you can do one-legged deadlifts. Certainly when you're doing Tai Chi and yoga, you're going to work on balance. And those there are ways that are available to work on balance. And you can find, if you go online, you're going to find balance exercises as well. And if you go to the gym and get fit, you know, do you have, so you're teaching silver sneakers. Are you teaching balance exercises?
Yep.
Yeah. So balance is super important. It becomes even more important as you get older.
And I can comment on that. One of the things that I tell people is that they should, and you'll appreciate this because you're a storch. I told them to be a stork.
That's
and if they are a stork, then they will be standing on one leg.
Yes.
And the best place to do a one-leg balance exercise is when you're standing at your kitchen counter, maybe doing dishes, maybe working on stuff, because then you can grab for the counter when you need to. You've got that heavy stability in front of you. But to practice, you know, 5 seconds at a time, 10 seconds at a time, whatever you have to do, just standing on one leg, and switch back and forth, right to left. And it's really, really good because it helps you focus on your balance more.
Yeah, that's very good. So Silver Sneakers has a focus on balance.
Yes, and also there is, I actually have to study this because Jessica from the community center showed me that there is an actual course of I've fallen and I can't get up.
Excellent.
To teach people, once they've fallen on the floor, how to get up. And I have gone through that with people.
That's great.
Because it's the number one 911 call.
Yeah.
So it's like, let's figure out how to get ourselves off the floor once we've fallen.
People, getting up and down is a huge issue. And I remember watching Grace and Frankie. Mm. And Grace had an issue with her knee, and she was having trouble getting off the toilet. And that's an issue. Getting up and down is serious business, because you need to be able to get up and down out of bed. You need to get up and down out of chairs. You need to get up and down off the toilet. And in Grace and Frankie, it was very funny, because poor Grace had a knee issue, and I don't know if she ultimately got a knee replacement surgery. I can't remember. But Grace and Frankie invented a toilet that booted you off it. It had an automatic rise on it.
And you know they make chairs that do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
There are chairs that elevate you when you're...
Right, if you have issues with getting up and down.
With that, right?
But it's much better to maintain your muscle strength by getting exercise. So because as you age, standing up becomes an issue. Any of the activities that you're going to do in your everyday life, they require balance, and making sure that you have the muscle mass to do that is important. If you lose muscle mass, you lose proprioceptors, and proprioceptors are the things that are going to help you with balance, because the proprioceptors in your muscles help you to know where you are in space. So... all right, so that's your deal with sarcopenia. So that was a nice review of sarcopenia. The water's in front of me, but it's not in front of the camera, so it's not on screen. Okay, so anyway, all right, so now we talked about sarcopenia. Let's see if we only have a few minutes to talk about another topic. Let's talk a little bit about anatoGG. So anatoGG is it's a supplement. It has 150 milligrams of geraniol. That was interesting. I think we just had a noise that just happened. I think we just had some snow fall off the solar panels.
Yes, we did.
So that's...
Yeah, it rumbles when it happens. It sounds like we're having an avalanche.
But
that's a good sign. That means we're generating power right now.
Yeah, so that's
You're great. Actually generating power when you have snow on your solar panels.
Really? So
most people don't realize
I don't realize that.
Yeah, the sun penetrates through the snow.
No kidding!
Yeah.
That's great.
Yep.
Even though the sun is reflecting off the snow.
That's correct.
Okay. So geranial, it's a compound that plays a critical role in a lot of biological processes. Geranial is needed for protein synthesis. It's a supplement that you can take that can help to build your muscle mass. It's another supplement. It's along with your protein shake, your branched chain amino acids, your creatine, your omega-3 fatty acids. There's this geranial, and it often comes attached to annatto. And it occurs naturally in annatto. It's also in flax seeds, sunflower seeds, and olive oils. And it's also in tomatoes and certain medicinal herbs. And humans do make it, but endogenous production is not always adequate to support your needs. And especially as you're getting older, geranial can be a good thing to take. And of course, it's one of the things that naturally goes down during aging. And it also is inhibited by certain pharmaceutical drugs. Ready for it?
What?
The drugs that inhibit geranial.
I have no idea.
Statins.
Oh, those fools.
Yes, statins and bisphosphonates. So statins,
right.
Cholesterol-lowering drugs lower geranial. So one of the things that can happen as a result of taking statins is reduced muscle mass. Yippee.
Yeah. Well, you know how much I like statins.
Yeah, not much at all.
No.
And then bisphosphonates. So bisphosphonates are certain kinds of drugs that help to increase bone density. They're given to women people who have osteoporosis. Men get them too. They're given to people with osteoporosis, and they help to rebuild your bones. But bisphosphonates, over time, don't really rebuild your bones, and they do decrease geranial, which is counterproductive because geranial will help you to increase muscle mass. Muscle mass helps you to increase bone density. If you take a drug that causes you to decrease bone density, you're at cross purposes. Because you're supposed to, because the bisphosphonates is supposed to increase your bony density. This will cause a need for supplementation. Okay. And there are a lot of applications for annatto-GG. It is something to support healthy aging. And sarcopenia is very common, as we said, as we age, and geranial can be really helpful, because there's a natural, so taking it in lieu of the natural decline of geranial synthesis during aging can help you to rebuild muscle. So, geranial helps with protein synthesis and modification, cell growth, differentiation, survival, and breakdown. It helps with CoQ10 synthesis, also heme A, dolichol, and other proteins. And it helps to convert K1 to K2. So, if more K2, you're going to have more, you're going to have better muscle mass. So, it helps you, as I said, with producing CoQ10. Preventing and reversing sarcopenia and even muscle wasting and cachexia. Helps you maintain your bone density, synthesis of K2, your metabolic health, and it helps with pain reduction and your skin health. So it's good stuff. So I'm taking annatto-E right now. I'm not taking annatto-GG. But anyway, so this is something else that can help. Geranial. You'll see it in supplements as GG. So the geranial helps to reduce expression of muscle atrophy-related genes and enhance muscle differentiation in skeletal muscle. That compared to younger individuals, older people need more support with their muscle mass. So geranial can help you to rebuild your muscle. So I have to go. Because yeah. We're out of time. So geranial, so you're going to look for it as a supplement. It's going to have GG as a suffix in it. All right. So that was my first radio naturopath. No, it's my second radio naturopath of 2024. So welcome back, everybody. Happy New Year. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram. at FranStorch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.